You know, some airplanes refuse to die. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is the Hangar on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair, because tonight I want to tell you about one of the most stubborn resurrection stories in the warbird world. A beat-up, sun-baked B-29 sitting in the California desert with no engines, no glass, and no business ever flying again. And the group of volunteers in Wichita, Kansas who spent 16 years proving that wrong. Her name is Doc. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSold.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at aviationsold.com. Now, if you know your B-29s, you already know about Fifi. For decades, she was the only flying superfortress on the planet. The commemorative Air Force kept her in the air, and she was it. The last one, but way out at Naval Air Weapons Station China Lake, sitting in the Mojave scrub about 150 miles northeast of Los Angeles. There were a handful of B-29 airframes that the Navy had been using as target practice and ballistic test subjects since the late 1940s. Most of them were too far gone. Bullet holes, collapsed landing gear, missing tails, junk basically. But one of them, serial number 44-6972, was a little less wrecked than the others. She had been built at the Boeing plant in Wichita in 1944. Late in the war, she served with the 29th Bomb Group out of Guam, flew combat missions over Japan. After the war, she did weather reconnaissance, then got sent to China Lake in 1956 and sat there for 40 years. A man named Tony Mazzolini found her. Tony was a quality inspector at a parts plant in Cleveland, Ohio. He was no aviation mogul, no deep pockets, just a guy who loved warbirds and had heard rumors about B-29s sitting out in the desert. In 1987, he went out there, walked the ramp at China Lake, and saw what was left of 44-6972. The desert had actually been kind to her. Dry air, almost no humidity. The aluminum skin was intact in most places. The bones were solid. Tony looked at this airplane and thought, we can save this one. Now here's where it gets interesting. It took him 11 years just to get permission to have her. 11 years of paperwork, the Navy owned the airframe. The airplane sat on restricted military land. Nobody in the Department of Defense was in any hurry to figure out how to surplus a 60,000-pound derelict airplane to a private citizen in Ohio. Tony wrote letters, he made phone calls, he drove people crazy. And in 1998, the Navy finally said yes, but there was a catch. They would not let him disassemble the airplane at China Lake. He had to take her out whole. So in 2000, they loaded that B-29 fuselage onto a massive flatbed truck and rolled her across the desert. No wings, no engines, no tail feathers, just the bare fuselage looking like a beached whale on a highway. They hauled her all the way to the old Boeing plant in Wichita, and that is where the magic of this story really begins. Wichita is where this airplane was born. Plant 2, the same facility where Boeing had cranked out B-29s during the war, was still standing. A group of retired Boeing workers, guys who had spent their careers building airplanes in that same factory, looked at this stripped-out hulk and said, "We built her once, we can build her again." They called themselves Doc's Friends. The name came from the airplane's nose art connection. During the war, there had been a set of B-29s named after the Seven Dwarfs. Doc was one of them. The original nose art was long gone, but the name stuck, and it became the identity of the whole restoration. Now, I want you to understand the scale of what these folks were attempting. A B-29 Superfortress is not a Stearman. She is 141,000 pounds maximum gross weight. Wingspan of 141 feet. Four Wright R3350 duplex Cyclone engines, each one making 2,200 horsepower. Pressurized cabin, remote-controlled gun turrets, analog fire control computers. In 1944, this was the most technologically advanced airplane in the world. Restoring one is not a hobby. It is an industrial project, and these volunteers did it in a hangar with donated tools, scrounged parts, and a whole lot of stubbornness. Let me tell you about the engines, because that was the first impossible problem. You cannot just order a Wright R3350. They have not been manufactured since the late 1940s. There are a limited number of them left on Earth, and most of those are sitting in museums or hanging on pylons as static displays. Doc's Friends had to track down four cores that were rebuildable. They found them scattered across the country. One came from a boneyard, another from a collector. The details get fuzzy because these deals happened over years through back channels and handshake agreements in the warbird community. Each engine had to be completely torn down, inspected and rebuilt. We are talking about 18 cylinders per engine, 72 cylinders total, each one the size of a coffee can. New piston rings, new valve seats, every accessory overhauled or replaced. The reduction gearboxes alone are engineering marvels that weigh hundreds of pounds. And all four had to be brought to the same standard and timed to perfection. Then there were the propellers, 16-foot 6-inch Hamilton standard 4-blade constant speed props. Each blade had to be individually inspected for cracks using dye-penetrant and magnetic particle testing. These blades spin at over 1,000 RPM. A crack you cannot see with your eyes will turn into a catastrophic failure at full power. The wing spars were another mountain to climb. The center wing section on a B-29 carries the entire structural load of those four engines and the fuel. Corrosion in a wing spar is a death sentence for a restoration. Doc's team had to do extensive non-destructive testing on every inch of those spars. Where they found damage, they fabricated repair doublers using original Boeing engineering data. And here's the remarkable part. Some of the retired Boeing engineers on the team had access to the original stress analysis from the 1940s. They knew exactly what loads those spars were designed to carry because they had worked on the production line when they were young men. Think about that for a second. The same hands that built B-29s during the war were now rebuilding 160 years later. A man in his 80s running his fingers along a spar cap he might have riveted when he was 19 years old. That is not just a restoration, that is a circle closing. The pressurization system was another nightmare. The B-29 was the first production bomber with a pressurized cabin. That system relies on seals, gaskets, and check valves that were designed for a wartime service life, not for 70-year-old airframes. Every seal had to be replaced. Every cabin joint had to be inspected for leaks. They were not going to fly her pressurized, but the structural integrity of the pressure vessel is still critical to the airframe. The glass. Oh, the glass. The B-29 has that beautiful greenhouse nose, all those curved plexiglass panels. Every single one was gone when they pulled her out of the desert. New panels had to be formed using original tooling profiles, heated and bent into shapes that match the fuselage contour within fractions of an inch. Each panel is different. There is no off-the-shelf supplier for B-29 nose glass. The instrument panel was another story. They needed original flight instruments, engine gauges, and the analog computing equipment for the fire control system. The Warbird community came through. Parts trickled in from estate sales, from other museum deaccessions, from old hangars where boxes of surplus had been sitting since Truman was president. The electrical system was rebuilt from scratch. Miles of wire, hundreds of connections, and they had to make it work with modern avionics overlaid on the original wiring, because the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, requires a functioning transponder and communications suite. So you have got 1944 electrical architecture talking to 21st century avionics. Making those two worlds coexist without burning down the airplane is a testament to the ingenuity of the electrical team. Now, through all of this, money was the constant headache. This was not a billionaire's vanity project. Doc's Friends is a nonprofit. They raised money through donations, merchandise sales, events, and a lot of begging. The total cost of the restoration came in somewhere around $4 to $5 million, which sounds like a lot until you realize that a single new turboprop engine for a King Air costs more than $1 million. They rebuilt a B-29 for the price of a nice King Air. That is what volunteer labor and sheer determination buy you. There were dark years. There were stretches where progress slowed to almost nothing because the money ran out or a critical part could not be found. There were moments when people on the team wondered if this airplane would ever fly. Tony Mazzolini, the man who started the whole thing, did not live to see the first flight. He passed away before Doc took to the sky, but the team he built kept going. On July 17, 2016, Doc flew for the first time in 60 years. She lifted off from McConnell Air Force Base in Wichita, the very city where she was born, with a crew of experienced Warbird pilots at the controls. Four Wright Cyclones roaring, that distinctive B-29 sound, a deep harmonious thunder that you feel in your chest before you hear it in your ears. She climbed into the Kansas sky and the crowd on the ground lost their minds. I have talked to people who were there that day. Grown men, retired Boeing workers in their 70s and 80s, standing on the ramp with tears running down their faces. They had spent 15, 16 years of their lives in that hangar. Weekends, holidays, birthdays they missed. And now their airplane was flying. Since that first flight, Doc has become a regular on the airshow circuit. She flies alongside Fifi sometimes, and when those two B-29s are in formation, it is the only time in the world you will see two flying superfortresses together. There are only two out of nearly 4,000 built. Two still fly. Doc is based at Eisenhower National Airport in Wichita, in a purpose-built hangar that also serves as an education center. They call it the B-29 Doc Hangar and Education Center, and it is open to the public. What I love about this story is that it is not really about an airplane. I mean, it is. Doc is magnificent, but it is really about the people. It is about a quality inspector from Cleveland who looked at a wreck in the desert and saw a flying machine. It is about retired factory workers who refused to let their life's work disappear. It is about a community in Wichita that understood that this airplane is not just metal and rivets. It is a piece of who they are. That city built the bombers that ended the war, and they were not going to let the last rebuildable one rot in the sand. The restoration of Doc also tells us something important about what we lose when these airplanes are gone. You can read about a B-29 in a book, you can look at one in a museum, but when you hear those four engines start up, when you feel the ground shake, when you smell that mix of avgas and hot oil and hydraulic fluid, you understand what it was like in a way that no photograph or written account can deliver. These flying warbirds are time machines, and everyone we lose is a door that closes forever. Doc's friend still operates the airplane today. The maintenance never stops. Those Wright engines are thirsty and temperamental. Every flight hour requires hours of maintenance afterward. The volunteer crew keeps at it because they know what they have and what it means. Most of the details tonight came from the Doc's Friends organization directly, along with reporting from Warbird Digest and the Wichita Eagle, which covered the restoration extensively over the years. If you want to see Doc fly or visit the hangar, you can find their schedule at b29doc.com. And if you want more stories like this one, come find us at radiohangar.com. Fly safe out there, and if somebody tells you something cannot be done, well, show them a picture of a burned-out Hulk in the Mojave, and then show them Doc over Wichita with four cyclones singing. See you next time.